B. The Shard Preservation Survivor. How does he look?
Is that a test to see if I've actually spoken with him? Kelsier said. Or a sincere question as to the creature's status?
Both.
He's dying, Kelsier said, spinning Naja's knife in his fingers. He'd palmed it during their altercation a moment ago, and was curious to find that, though it was made of metal, it didn't glow. He's a short man with black hair, or he used to be. He's been, well, unraveling. Hey! Naj said, eyes narrowing at the knife. He looked at his belt and the empty sheath. Hey!
Unraveling, Chris said. So, a slow death. A.T. doesn't know how to splinter another shard, or he hasn't the strength.
A.T.? Kelsier asked. Preservation mentioned that name, too. Chris pointed at the sky with one finger while she sipped at her drink.
That's him. What he's become, at least.
And what is a shard? Kelsier asked.
Are you a scholar, Mr. Survivor?
No, he said. But I've killed a few.
Cute. Well, you've stumbled into something far, far bigger than you, your politics, or your little planet.
Bigger than you can handle, Survivor, Naj said, swiping back his knife as Kelsier balanced it on his finger. You should just bow out now.
Naj does have a point, Chris said. Your questions are dangerous. Once you step behind the curtain and see the actors as the people they are, it becomes harder to pretend the play is real.
Kelsier leaned forward, clasping his hands before him. Hell, that fire was warm, but it didn't seem to be burning anything. He stared at the flames and swallowed. I woke up from death after having deep down expected there to be no afterlife. I found that God was real, but that he was dying. I need answers. Please.
Curious, she said.
He looked up, frowning.
I have heard many stories of you, Survivor, she said. They often laud your many admirable qualities. Sincerity is never one of those.
I can steal something else from your manservant, Kelsier said, if it will make you feel more comfortable that I am what you expected.
You can try, Naj said, walking around the fire, folding his arms and obviously trying to look intimidating.
The shards, Chris said, drawing Kelsier's attention, are not God, but they are pieces of God. Ruin, preservation, autonomy, cultivation, devotion. There are 16 of them.
16, Kelsier breathed. There are 14 more of these things running around?
The rest are on other planets.
Other... Kelsier blinked. Other planets.
Ah, see? Naj said. You have broken him already, Chris.
Other planets, she repeated gently. Yes, there are dozens of them. Many are inhabited by people much like you or me. There is an original, shrouded and hidden somewhere in the Cosmere. I've yet to find it, but I have found stories. Anyway, there was a god, Adonalsium. I don't know if it was a force or a being, though I suspect the latter. 16 people together killed Adonalsium, ripping it apart and dividing its essence between them, becoming the first who ascended.
Who are they? Kelsier said, trying to make sense of this.
A diverse group, she said, with equally diverse motives. Some wished for the power, others saw killing Adonalsium as the only good option left to them. Together they murdered a deity and became divine themselves.
She smiled in a kindly way, as if to prepare him for what came next.
Two of those created this planet, Survivor. including the people on it.
So, my world and everyone I know, Kelsier said, is the creation of a pair of half-gods?
More like fractional gods, Nage said, and ones with no particular qualifications for deityhood, other than being conniving enough to murder the guy who had the job before.
Oh, hell, Kelsier breathed. No wonder we're all so bloody messed up.
Actually, Chris noted, people are generally like that, no matter who made them. If it's any consolation, Adenalsium originally created the first humans. Therefore, your gods had a pattern to use.
So we're copies of a flawed original, Kelsier said. Not terribly comforting. He looked upward. And that thing? It used to be human?
The power distorts, Chris said. There's a person in that somewhere directing it, or perhaps just riding it at this point.
Kelsier remembered the puppet Ruin had presented, the shape of a man, now basically a shell, filled with a terrible power. So, what happens if one of these things dies?
I'm very curious to see, Chris said. I've never viewed it in person, and the past deaths were different. They were each a single stunning event. The god's power shattered and dispersed. This is more like a strangulation, while those were like a beheading. This should be very instructive.
Unless I stop it, Kelsier said. She smiled at him. Don't be patronizing, Kelsier snapped, standing up, the stool falling down behind him. I am going to stop it.
This world is winding down, Survivor, Chris said. It is a true shame, but I know of no way to save it. I came with the hopes that I might be able to help, but I can't even reach the physical realm here any longer.
Someone destroyed the Gateway Inn, Nage noted. Someone incredibly foolhardy, brash, stupid, didn't...
You're overselling it, Kelsier said. The Drifter told me what I did.
The... who?
Chris asked. Fellow with white hair, Kelsier said. Lanky, with a sharp nose and...
Damn, Chris said. Did he get to the Well of Ascension?
Stole something there, Kelsier said. A bit of metal.
Damn, Chris said, looking at her servant. We need to go. I'm sorry, Survivor.
But...
This isn't because of what you just told us,
she said, rising and waving for Nage to help gather their things.
We were leaving anyway. This planet is dying. As much as I wish to witness the death of Ashard, I don't dare risk doing it from up close. We'll observe from afar.
Preservation thought you'd be able to help, Kelsier said. Surely there is something you can do? Something you can tell me? It can't be over.
I am sorry, Survivor, Chris said softly. Perhaps if I knew more, perhaps if I could convince the Eyrie to answer my questions.
She shook her head.
It will happen slowly, Survivor, over months, but it is coming. Ruin will consume this world, and the man once known as Eti won't be able to stop it, if he even cared to. Everything, Kelsier whispered. Everything I've known. Every person on my planet?
Nearby, Nage bent down and picked up the fire, making it vanish. The oversized flame just folded up upon itself in his palm, and Kelsier thought he saw a puff of mist when it did so. Kelsier picked up his stool with one finger, unscrewed the bolt on the bottom, and palmed it into his hand before handing the stool to Nage. Nage then tugged on a hiking pack tied with scroll cases across the top. He looked to Chris.
Stay, Kelsier said, turning back to Chris. Help me. Help you? I can't even help myself, Survivor. I'm in exile, and even if I weren't, I wouldn't have the resources to stop Ashard. I probably should never have come.
She hesitated.
And I'm sorry, but I cannot invite you to come with us. The eyes of your God will be upon you, Kelsier. He'll know where you are, as you have pieces of him within. It has been dangerous enough to speak here with you."
Naj handed her a pack, and she slung it over her shoulder. "I am going to stop this," Kelsier told them. Chris lifted a hand and curled her fingers in an unfamiliar gesture, bidding him farewell, it seemed. She turned away from the clearing and strode away into the brush. Naj followed. Kelsier sank down. They'd taken the stools, so he settled onto the ground, bowing his head. "This is what you deserve, Kelsier," a piece of him thought. "You wish to dance with the divine and steal from gods. Should you now be surprised that you found yourself in over your head?" The sound of rustling leaves made him scramble back to his feet. Naj emerged from the shadows. The shorter man stopped at the perimeter of the abandoned camp, then cursed softly before stepping forward and removing his side knife, sheath and all, and handing it to Kelsier. Hesitant, Kelsier accepted the leather-bound weapon.
"It's a bad state you and yours are in," Naj said softly. "But I rather like this place. Damnable mists and all." He pointed westward. "They've set up out there."
"They?"
"The Eyrie," he said. "They've been at this far longer than we have, Survivor. If someone will know how to help you, it will be the Eyrie. Look for them where the land becomes solid again."
"Solid again?" Kelsier said. "Lake Tyrion?"
"Beyond. Far beyond, Survivor."
"The ocean? That's miles and miles away. Past Foremost."
Naj patted him on the shoulder, then turned back to hike after Chris.
"Is there hope?" Kelsier called.
"What if I told you no?" Naj said over his shoulder. "What if I said I figured you were damn well ruined, so to speak? Would it change what you were going to do?"
"No."
Naj raised his fingers to his forehead in a kind of salute.
"Farewell, Survivor. Take care of my knife. I'm fond of it."
He vanished into the darkness. Kelsier watched after him, then did the only rational thing. He ate the bolt he'd taken from the bottom of the stool. 3. The bolt didn't do anything. He'd hoped he'd be able to make allomancy work, but the bolt just settled into his stomach, a strange and uncomfortable weight. He couldn't burn it, despite trying. As he walked, he eventually coughed it back up and tossed it away. He stepped to the transition from the island to the misty ground around Luthadel and felt a new weight upon him. A doomed world, dying gods, and an entire universe he'd never known existed. His only hope now was to journey to the ocean? That was farther than he had ever gone, even during his travels with Gemmel. It would take months to walk that far. Did they have months? He stepped off the island, crossing onto the soft ground of the misted banks. Luthadel loomed in the near distance, a shadowy wall of curling mist.
"Fuzz," he called. "You out there?"
"I'm everywhere," Preservation said, appearing beside him.
"So you were listening?"
Kelsier asked. He nodded absently, form frayed, face indistinct.
"I think... surely I was."
"They mentioned someone called the Eyrie?"
"Yes, the Eyrie,"
Preservation said, pronouncing it in a slightly different way.
"Three letters, I-R-E. It means something in their language, these people from another land, the ones who died, but did not. I have felt them crowding at the edges of my vision, like spirits in the night."
"Dead, but alive," Kelsier said. "Like me?"
"No."
"Then what?"
"Died, but did not."
"Great," Kelsier thought.
He turned toward the west.
They are supposedly at the ocean.
The Irie built a city, Preservation said softly, in a place between worlds.
Well, Kelsier said, then took a deep breath. That's where I'm going.
Going? Preservation said. You're leaving me?
The urgency of those words startled Kelsier. If these people can help us, then I need to talk to them.
They can't help us, Preservation said. They're callous. They plot over my corpse like scavenging insects waiting for the last beat of the heart. Don't go. Don't leave me.
You're everywhere. I can't leave you.
No. They're beyond me. I cannot depart this land. I'm too invested in it, in every rock and leaf.
He pulsed, his already indistinct form spreading thinner.
We grow attached easily, and it takes one who is particularly dedicated to leave.
And ruin? Kelsier said, turning toward the west. If he destroys everything, would he be able to escape?
Yes, Preservation said very softly. He could go then. But Kelsier, you can't abandon me. We're a team, right?
Kelsier rested his hand on the creature's shoulder. Once so confident, now little more than a smudge in the air. I'll be back as soon as I can. If I'm going to stop that thing, I'll need some kind of help.
You pity me.
I pity anyone who's not me, Fuzz. A hazard of being the man I am. But you can do this. Keep an eye on Ruin, and try to get word to Vin and that nobleman of hers.
Pity, Preservation repeated. Is that what I've become? Yes. Yes, it is.
He reached up with a vaguely outlined hand and seized Kelsier's arm from underneath. Kelsier gasped, then cut off as Preservation grabbed him by the back of the neck with his other hand, locking his gaze with Kelsier's. Those eyes snapped into focus, fuzziness becoming suddenly distinct. A glow burst from them, silvery white, bathing Kelsier and blinding him. Everything else was vaporized. Nothing could withstand that terrible, wonderful light. Kelsier lost form, thought, very being. He transcended self and entered a place of flowing light. Ribbons of it exploded from him, and though he tried to scream, he had no voice. Time didn't pass. Time had no relevance here. It was not a place. Location had no relevance. Only connection, person to person, man to world, Kelsier to God. And that God was everything. The thing he had pitied was the very ground Kelsier walked upon, the air, the metals, his own soul. Preservation was everywhere. Beside it, Kelsier was insignificant, an afterthought. The vision faded. Kelsier stumbled away from Preservation, who stood placid, a blur in the air, but a representation of so much more. Kelsier put his hand to his chest and was pleased, for a reason he couldn't explain, to find that his heart was beating. His soul was learning to imitate a body, and somehow having a racing heart was comforting.
I suppose I deserved that, Kelsier said. Be careful how you use those visions, Fuzz. Reality isn't particularly healthy for a man's ego.
I would call it very healthy, Preservation replied.
I saw everything, Kelsier mumbled. Everyone, everything. My connection to them and...
Spreading into the future, he thought, grasping at an explanation. Possibilities. So many possibilities. Like Atium.
Yes,
Preservation said, sounding exhausted.
It can be trying to recognize one's true place in things. Few can handle the...
Send me back, Kelsier said, scrambling up to Preservation, taking him by the arms.
What?
Send me back! I need to see that again!
Your mind is too fragile. It will break.
I broke that damn thing years ago, Fuzz. Do it! Please! Preservation hesitantly gripped him, and this time his eyes took longer to start glowing. They flashed, his form trembling, and for a moment Kelsier thought the god would dissipate entirely. Then the glow spurted to life, and in an instant Kelsier was consumed.
This time he forced himself to look away from Preservation, though it was less a matter of looking and more a matter of trying to sort through the horrible overload of information and sensation that assaulted him. Unfortunately, in turning his attention away from Preservation, he risked giving it to something else, something equally demanding. There was a second god here, black and terrible. The thing with the spines and spidery legs, sprouting from dark mists and reaching into everything throughout the land, including Kelsier. In fact, his ties to Preservation were trivial by comparison to these hundreds of black fingers which attached him to that thing beyond. He sensed a powerful satisfaction from it, along with an idea. Not words, just an undeniable fact.
You are mine, Survivor.
Kelsier rebelled at the thought, but in this place of perfect light, truth had to be acknowledged. Straining, soul crumbling before that terrible reality, Kelsier turned toward the tendrils of light spreading into the distance. Possibilities upon possibilities compounded upon one another. Infinite, overwhelming. The future. He dropped out of the vision again and this time fell to his knees, panting. The glow faded and he was again on the banks of Lake Luthadel. Preservation settled down beside him and rested his hand on Kelsier's back.
I can't stop him, Kelsier whispered. I know,
Preservation said. I could see thousands upon thousands of possibilities. In none of them did I defeat that thing.
The ribbons of the future are never as useful as they should be,
Preservation said.
I rode them much in the past. It's too hard to see what is actually likely, and what is just a fragile, distant maybe.
I can't stop it, Kelsier whispered. I'm too like it. Everything I do serves it.
Kelsier looked up, smiling.
It broke you, Preservation said.
No, Fuzz,
Kelsier laughed, standing.
No, I can't stop it. No matter what I do, I can't stop it.
He looked down at Preservation.
But she can. He knows this. You were right. He has been preparing her, infusing her.
She can beat it.
A frail possibility,
Preservation said.
A false promise.
No, Kelsier said softly. A hope.
He held his hand out. Preservation took it and let Kelsier pull him to his feet. God nodded.
A hope. What is our plan?
I continue to the west, Kelsier said. I saw in the possibilities.
Do not trust what you saw,
Preservation said, sounding far more firm than he had earlier.
It takes an infinite mind to even begin to glean information from those tendrils of the future. Even then you are likely to be wrong.
The path I saw started by me going to the west, Kelsier said. It's all I can think to do, unless you have a better suggestion.
Preservation shook his head.
You need to stay here. Fight him off, resist, and try to get through to Vin. If not her, then Sazed.
He is not well.
Kelsier cocked his head. Hurt in the fighting?
Worse. Ruin tries to break him.
Damn.
But what could he do except continue with his plan?
Do what you can, Kelsier said. I'll seek these people to the west.
They won't help.
I'm not going to ask for their help, Kelsier said, then smiled. I'm going to rob them.
Part 4 Journey 1 Kelsier ran. He needed the urgency, the strength of being in motion. A man running somewhere had a purpose. He left the region named Luthadel, jogging alongside a canal for direction. Like the lake, the canal was reversed here, a long, narrow mound rather than a trough. As he moved, Kelsier tried yet again to sort through the conflicting set of images, impressions, and ideas he'd experienced in that place where he could perceive everything. Vin could beat this thing. Of that Kelsier was certain, as certain as he was that he couldn't defeat Ruin himself. From there, however, his thoughts grew more vague. These people, the Eyrie, were working on something dangerous, something he could use against Ruin. Maybe. That was all he had. Preservation was right. The threads in that place between moments were too knotted, too ephemeral, to give him much beyond a vague impression. But at least it was something he could do. So he ran. He didn't have time to walk. He wished again for Allomancy, Pewter, to lend him strength and endurance. He'd had that power for a short time, compared to the rest of his life, but it had become second nature to him very quickly. He no longer had those abilities to lean on. Fortunately, without a body, he did not seem to tire unless he stopped to think about the fact that he should be tiring. That was no problem. If there was one thing Kelsier was good at, it was lying to himself. Hopefully, Vin would be able to hold out long enough to save them all. It was a terrible weight to put on the shoulders of one person. He would lift what portion he could. 2. I know this place, Kelsier thought, slowing his jog as he passed through a small canal-side town. A waystop where canal masters could rest their ska, have a drink, and enjoy a warm bath for the night. It was one of many that dotted the dominances, all nearly identical. This one could be distinguished by the two crumbling towers on the opposite bank of the canal. Yes, Kelsier thought, stopping on the street. Those towers were distinctive even in the dreamy misted landscape of this realm. Long's Follow. How could he have reached this place already? It was well outside the central dominance. How long had he been running? Time had become a strange thing to him since his death. He had no need for food, and didn't feel tiredness beyond what his mind projected. With Ruin obstructing the sun and the only light that of the misty ground, it was very difficult to judge the passing of days. He'd been running for a while. A long while? He suddenly felt exhausted, his mind numbing as if suffering the effects of a pewter drag. He groaned and sat down by the side of the canal mound, which was covered in tiny plants. Those plants seemed to grow anywhere water was present in the real world. He'd found them sprouting from misty cups. Occasionally he'd found other, stranger plants in the landscape between towns, places where the springy ground grew more firm, places without people, the extended ashen emptiness between dots of civilization. He heaved himself to his feet, fighting off the exhaustion. It was all in his head, quite literally. Reluctant to push himself back into a run for the moment, he strolled through Long's Follow. A town had grown up here along the canal stop. Well, a village. Noblemen who ran plantations farther out from the canal would come here to trade and to ship goods in toward Luthadel. It had become a hub of commerce, a bustling civic center. Kelsier had killed 7 men here. Or had it been 8? He strolled, counting them off. The Lord, both of his sons, his wife. Yes, 7, counting 2 guards and that cousin. That was right. He'd spared the cousin's wife, who had been with child. He and Mare had been renting a room above the general's store, over there, pretending to be merchants from a minor noble house. He walked up the steps outside the building, stopping at the door. He rested his fingers on it and sensed it in the physical realm, familiar even after all this time. "We had plans," Mare had said as they furiously packed. "How could you do this?" "They murdered a child, Mare," Kelsier whispered. Sank her in the canal with stones tied to her feet. Because she spilled their tea. Because she spilled the damn tea. Oh, Kel, she'd said. They kill people every day. It's terrible, but it's life. Are you going to bring retribution to every nobleman out there? Yes, Kelsier whispered. He made a fist against the door. I did it. I made the Lord Ruler himself pay, Mayor. And that boiling mass of writhing serpents in the sky? That had been the result. He'd seen the truth in his moment between time with preservation. The Lord Ruler would have prevented this doom for another 1,000 years. Kill one man, get vengeance, but cause how many more deaths? He and Mare had fled this village. He'd later learned that Inquisitors had come torturing many of the people they'd known here, killing not a few in their search for answers. Kill, and they killed in turn. Get revenge, and their vengeance returned tenfold. You are mine, survivor. He gripped at the door handle, but couldn't do more than gain an impression of how it looked. He couldn't move it. Fortunately, he was able to push against the door and force himself through. He stumbled to a stop and was shocked to see that the room was occupied. A solitary soul, glowing, so it was a person in the real world, not this one, lay on the cot in the corner. He and Mare had left this place in a hurry and had been forced to stash some of their possessions in a hole behind a stone in the hearth. Those were gone now. He'd pilfered them after Mare's death, following his escape from the pits and his training with a strange old allomancer named Gemmel. He avoided the person and walked to the small hearth. When he'd returned for that hidden coin, he'd been on his way to Luthadel, his mind overflowing with grand plans and dangerous ideas. He'd retrieved the coin, but had found more than he intended. The pouch of coin, and beside it, a journal of Mare's. If I'd died, Kelsier said, loudly, if I'd let myself be pulled into that other place, I'd be with Mare now, wouldn't I? No reply. Preservation! Kelsier shouted. Do you know where she is? Did you see her pass into that darkness you spoke of? In that place where people go after this? I'd be with her, wouldn't I? If I'd let myself die? Again, Preservation didn't reply. His mind certainly wasn't in all places, even if his essence was. Considering how erratic he'd been lately, his mind might not be completely in even one place. Kelsier sighed, looking around the small room. Then he stepped back, realizing that the person on the cot had stood up and was looking about. What do you want? Kelsier snapped. The figure jumped. Had he heard that? Kelsier walked up to the figure and touched him, gaining a vision of an old beggar, scraggly of beard and wild of eye. The man was muttering to himself, and Kelsier, while touching him, could make out some of it.
In me head, the man muttered. Get out of me head.
You can hear me, Kelsier said. The figure jumped again.
Damn whispers, he said. Get out of me head!
Kelsier lowered his hand. He'd seen this in the pulses. Sometimes the mad whispered the things they had heard from Ruin, but it seemed they could hear Kelsier as well. Could he use this man? Gemmel muttered like that sometimes, Kelsier realized, feeling a chill. I always thought he was mad. Kelsier tried to speak further with the man, but the effort was fruitless. The man kept jumping and muttering, but wouldn't actually respond. Eventually, Kelsier made his way back out of the room. He'd been glad for the madman to distract him from his memories of this place. He fished in his pocket, but then remembered he didn't have the picture of Mare's flower any longer. He'd left it for Vin. He knew the answer to the questions he'd asked of Preservation just before. In refusing to accept death, Kelsier had also given up returning to Mare. Unless there was nothing beyond the warping. Unless that death was real and final. Surely she couldn't have expected him to just give in, to let the stretching darkness take him. Everyone else I've seen passed willingly, Kelsier thought.
even the Lord Ruler. Why must I insist on remaining?
Foolish questions. Useless. He couldn't go when the world was in such danger. And he wouldn't just let himself die, not even to be with her. He left the town, turned his path to the west again, and continued running.
3. Kelsier knelt down beside an old cook fire, no longer burning, represented by a group of shadowy cold logs in this realm. He found it was important to stop every few weeks or so to catch a breather. He had been running, well, a long time now. Today he intended to finally crack a puzzle. He seized the misted remains of the old cook fire. Immediately he gained a vision of them in the real world, but he pushed through that, feeling something beyond. Not just images, but sensations. Almost emotions. Cold wood that somehow remembered warmth. This fire was dead in the real world, but it wished it could burn again. It was a strange sensation, realizing that logs could have wishes. This flame had burned for years, feeding the families of many ska. Countless generations had sat before this pit in the floor. They'd kept the fire burning almost perpetually, laughing, savoring their brief moments of joy. The fire had given them that. It longed to do so again. Unfortunately, the people had left. Kelsier was finding more and more villages abandoned these days. Ash falls went on longer than usual, and Kelsier had felt occasional trembling in the ground, even in this realm. Earthquakes. He could give this fire something.
Burn again, he told it. Be warm again.
It couldn't happen in the physical realm, but all things there could manifest here. The fire wasn't actually alive, but to the people who had once lived here, it had been almost so. A familiar, warm friend.
Burn.
Light burst from his fingers, pouring out of his hands, a flame appearing there. Kelsier dropped it quickly, stepping back, grinning at the crackling blaze. It looked very much like the fire that Naj and Chris had carried with them. The logs themselves had appeared on this side with dancing flames. Fire. He'd made fire in the world of the dead.
Not bad, Kel, he thought, kneeling.
After taking a deep breath, he pushed his hand into the fire and grabbed the center of the logs, then closed his fist, capturing the bit of mist that made up the essence of that cook fire. It all folded upon itself, vanishing. He cupped the small handful of mist. He could feel it like he could feel the ground beneath him. Springy, but real enough as long as he didn't push too hard. He tucked the soul of the cook fire away in his pocket, fairly certain it wouldn't burst alight unless he commanded it to do so. He left the ska hovel, stepping out into a plantation. He'd never been here before. This was farther west than he'd traveled with Gemmel. The plantations out here were made of odd rectangular buildings that were low and squat, but each had a large courtyard. He strolled out of this one, entering a street that ran among a dozen similar hovels. All in all, ska were better off out here than they were in the inner dominances. It was like saying that a man drowning in beer was better off than one drowning in acid. Ash fell through the sky. Though he'd not been able to see it during his first days in this realm, he'd learned to pick it out. It reflected like tiny, curling bits of mist, almost invisible. Kelsier broke into a jog, and the ash streamed around him. Some passed through him, leaving him with the impression that he was ash. A burned-out husk, a corpse reduced to embers that drifted on the wind. He passed far too much ash heaped up on the ground. It shouldn't be falling so heavily here. The ash mounds were distant. From what he'd learned in his travels, ash only fell once or twice a month out here. Or at least, that was how it had been before Ruin's awakening. Some trees still lived here, shadowy, their souls manifesting as misty forms that glowed like the souls of men. He approached people on the road who were making westward toward the coastal towns. Likely their noblemen had already fled that direction, terrified by the sudden increase of ash and the other signs of destruction. As Kelsier passed the people, he stretched out his hand, letting it brush against them and give him impressions of each one. A young mother, lamed by a broken foot, carrying her new baby close to her breast. An old woman, strong, as old Ska needed to be. The weak were often left to die. A young, freckled man in a fine shirt. He'd stolen that from the Lord's Manor, most likely. Kelsier watched for signs of madness or raving. He'd confirmed that those types could often hear him, though it didn't always require obvious madness. Many seemed unable to make out his specific words, but instead heard him as phantom whispers, impressions. He picked up speed, leaving the townspeople behind. He could tell that this was a well-traveled area from the light of the mists beneath him. During his month's running, he'd come to understand, and to an extent even accept, the cognitive realm. There was a certain freedom to being able to move unhindered through walls, to being able to peek in at the people and their lives. But he was so lonely. He tried not to think about it. He focused on his run and the challenge ahead. Because of the way time blended here, it didn't feel to him as if months had passed. Indeed, this experience was far preferable to his sanity-grating year trapped at the well. But he missed the people. Kelsier needed people, conversation, friends. Without them, he felt dried out. What he wouldn't have given for preservation, unhinged as he was, to appear and speak to him. Even that white-haired drifter would have been a welcome break from the wasteland of mists. He tried to find madmen so he could at least have some interaction with other living beings, no matter how meaningless. At least I've gained something, Kelsier thought. A campfire in his pocket. When he got out of this, and he would get out of it, he'd certainly have stories to tell. 4. Kelsier, the survivor of death, finally crested one last hill and beheld an incredible sight spread before him. Land. It rose from the edge of the mists, an ominous, dark expanse. It felt less alive than the shifting white-gray mists beneath him, but oh, was it a welcome sight. He let out a long, relieved sigh. These last few weeks had been increasingly difficult. The thought of more running had started to nauseate him, and the loneliness had him seeing phantoms in the shifting mists, hearing voices in the lifeless nothing all around. He was a much different figure from the one who had left Luthadel. He planted his staff on the ground beside him. He'd recovered that from the body of a dead refugee in the real world and coaxed it to life, giving it a new home and a new master to serve. Same for the enveloping cloak he wore, frayed at the edges, almost like a mist cloak. The pack he carried was different. He'd taken that from an abandoned store. No master had ever carried it. It considered its purpose to sit on a shelf and be admired. So far, it had still made for a suitable companion. Kelsier settled down, putting aside his staff and digging into his pack. He counted off his balls of mist, which he kept wrapped up tight in the pack. None had vanished this time. That was good. When an object was recovered, or worse, destroyed, in the physical realm, its identity changed, and the spirit would return to the location of its body. Abandoned objects were best. Ones that had been owned for a long while, so they had a strong identity, but that currently had nobody in the physical realm to care for them. He pulled out the ball of mist that was his campfire and unfolded it, bathing in its warmth. It was starting to fray, the logs pocked with misty holes. He could only guess that he'd carried it too far from its origin, and the distance was distressing it. He pulled out another ball of mist, which unfolded in his hand, becoming a leather water skin. He took a long drink. It didn't do him any real good. The water vanished soon after being poured out, and he didn't seem to need to drink. He drank anyway. It felt good on his lips and throat, refreshing. It let him pretend to be alive. He He huddled on that hillside overlooking the new frontier, sipping at phantom water beside the soul of a fire. His experience in the realm of gods, that moment between time, was a distant memory now. But, honestly, it felt distant from the second he'd fallen out of it. The brilliant connections and eternity-spanning revelations had immediately faded like mist before the morning sun. He'd needed to reach this place. Beyond that, he had no idea. There were people out there, but how did he find them? And what did he do when he located them? I need what they have, he thought, taking another pull on the water skin. But they won't give it to me. He knew that for certain. But what was it they had? Knowledge? How could he con someone when he didn't even know if they'd speak his language? Fuzz, Kelsier said, just as a test. Preservation, you there? No reply. He sighed, packing away his water skin. He glanced over his shoulder toward the direction he'd come from. Then he scrambled to his feet, ripping his knife from the sheath at his side and spinning about, putting the fire between him and what stood there. The figure wore robes and had bright, flame-red hair. He bore a welcoming smile, but Kelsier could see spines beneath the surface of his skin. Pricking spider legs, thousands of them, pushing against the skin and causing it to pucker outward in erratic motions. Ruin's puppet. The thing he'd seen the Force construct and dangle toward Vin.
Hello, Kelsier, Ruin said through the figure's lips. My colleague is unavailable, but I will convey your requests if you wish it of me.
Stay back, Kelsier said, flourishing the knife, reaching by instinct for metals he could no longer burn. Damn, he missed that.
Oh, Kelsier, Ruin said. Stay back? I'm all around you. The air you pretend to breathe, the ground beneath your feet. I'm in that knife and in your very soul. How exactly am I to stay back?
You can say what you wish, Kelsier said, but you don't own me. I am not yours.
Why do you resist so? Ruin asked, strolling around the fire.
Kelsier walked the other direction, keeping distance between himself and this creature.
Oh, I don't know, Kelsier said. Perhaps because you're an evil force of destruction and pain?
Ruin pulled up as if offended.
That was uncalled for.
He spread his hands.
Death is not evil, Kelsier. Death is necessary. Every clock must wind down, every day must end. Without me, there is no life, and never could have been. Life is change, and I represent that change.
And now you'll end it.
It was a gift I gave,
Ruin said, stretching out his hand toward Kelsier.
Life. Wondrous, beautiful life. The joy of the new child, the pride of a parent, the satisfaction of a job well done. These are from me. But it is done now, Kelsier. This planet is an elderly man, having lived his life in full, now wheezing his last breaths. It is not evil to give him the rest he demands. It's a mercy.
Kelsier looked at that hand, which undulated with the pinprick pressing of the spiders inside.
But who am I talking to? Ruin said with a sigh, pulling back his hand. A man who would not accept his own end, even though his soul longed for it. Even though his wife longed for him to join her in the beyond. No, Kelsier, I do not anticipate you will see the necessity of an ending. So continue to think me evil, if you must.
Would it hurt so much, Kelsier said, to give us a little more time? Ruin laughed.
Ever the thief, looking for what you can get away with. No, A reprieve has been granted time and time again. I assume you have no message for me to deliver, then?
Sure, Kelsier said. Tell Fuzz he's to take something long, hard, and sharp, then ram it up your backside for me.
As if he could harm even me. You realize that if he were in control, nobody would age, nobody would think or live. If he had his way, you'd all be frozen in time, unable to act, lest you harm one another.
So you're killing him?
As I said, Ruin replied with a grin. A mercy. For an old man well past his prime. But if all you plan to do is insult me, I must be going. It's a shame you'll be off on that island when the end comes. I assume you'd like to greet the others when they die.
It can't be that close.
It is, fortunately. But even if you could have done something to help, you're useless out here. A shame.
Sure, Kelsier thought, and you came here to tell me that, rather than remaining quietly pleased that I was off being distracted by my quest. Kelsier recognized a hook when he saw one. Ruin wanted him to believe that the end was very near, that coming out here had been pointless, which meant it wasn't. Preservation said he couldn't leave to go where I'm going, Kelsier thought, and Ruin is similarly bound, at least until the world is destroyed. Maybe, for the first time in months, he'd be able to escape that squirming sky and the eyes of the destroyer. He saluted Ruin, tucked away his fire, then strode down the hill.
"Running, Kelsier,"
Ruin said, appearing on the hillside with hands clasped as Kelsier passed him.
"You cannot flee your fate. You are tied to this world and to me."
Kelsier kept on walking, and Ruin appeared at the bottom of the hill in the same pose.
"Those fools in the fortress won't be able to help you," Ruin noted. "I think that once this world reaches its end, I will pay them a visit. They've existed far too long past what is right."
Kelsier stopped at the edge of the new land of dark stone, like the lake that had become an island. This one was even larger. The ocean had become a continent.
"I will kill Vin while you're gone," Ruin whispered. "I will kill them all. Think about that, Kelsier, on your journey. When you come back, if there's anything left, I might have need of you. Thank you for all you've done on my behalf."
Kelsier stepped out onto the ocean continent, leaving Ruin behind on the shore. Kelsier could almost see the spindly threads of power that animated this puppet, providing a voice to the terrible force. Damn. Its words were lies. He knew that.
They hurt, anyway.
Part 5. Iree. 1. He'd hoped to have the sun back once Ruin vanished from the sky, but after walking far enough out, he seemed to leave his world behind, and the sun with it. The sky here was nothing but empty blackness. Kelsier eventually managed to use some vines to strap his flagging cook fire to the end of his staff, which became an improvised torch. It was a strange experience, hiking through the darkened landscape, holding a staff with an entire campfire on the top. But the logs didn't fall apart, and the thing wasn't nearly as heavy as it should have been. Not as hot, either, particularly if, when bringing it out, he didn't make it manifest fully. Plant life grew all around him, real to his touch and eyes, though of strange varieties, some with brownish-red fronds and others with wide palms. Many trees, a jungle of exotic plants. There were some bits of mist in here. If he knelt by the ground and looked for them, he could find little glowing spirits, fish, sea plants. They manifested here above the ground, though in the ocean, on the other side, they were probably down within the depths.
Kelsier stood up, holding the soul of some kind of massive deep-sea creature, like a fish, only as large as a building, in his hand, feeling its ponderous strength. That was surreal, but so was his life these days. He dropped the fish's soul and continued onward, hiking through waist-high plants with a blazing staff lighting the way. As he got farther from the shore, he felt a tugging at his soul, a manifestation of his ties to the world he'd left behind. He knew, without having to experiment, that this tug would ultimately grow strong enough that he wouldn't be able to continue outward. He could use that. The tugging was a tool that let him judge if he was getting farther from his world, or if he'd gotten turned around in the darkness. Navigation was otherwise next to impossible, now that he didn't have the canals and roadways to guide him. By judging the pull on his soul, he kept himself pointed directly outward, away from his homeland. He wasn't completely certain that was where he'd find his goal, but it seemed like his best bet. He hiked through the jungle for days, but then it started to dwindle. Eventually, he reached a place where plants grew only in occasional patches. They were replaced with strange formations of rock, like glassy sculptures. The jagged things were often some 10 feet or more tall. He didn't know what to make of those. He had stopped passing the souls of fish, and nothing seemed to be alive out here in either realm. The pull tugging him backward was growing laborious to fight. He was beginning to worry he'd have to turn around when, at long last, he spotted something new. A light on the horizon.
2. Sneaking was a great deal easier when you didn't technically have a body. Kelsier moved in silence, having dismissed his cloak and staff. He'd left his pack behind, and though there were a few plants out here, he could pass through them, not even rustling their leaves. The lights ahead pulsed from a fortress crafted of white stone. It wasn't a city, but close enough for him. That light had an odd quality. It didn't burn or flicker like a flame. Some kind of limelight? He drew near and pulled up beside one of the odd rock formations that were common out here. It had hooked spikes drooping from it, almost like branches. The very walls of this fortress glowed faintly. Was that mist? It didn't seem to have the same hue to it. It was too blue. Keeping to the shadows of rock formations, Kelsier rounded the building toward a brighter light source at the back. This turned out to be an enormous glowing cord, as thick as a large tree trunk. It pulsed with a slow, rhythmic power, and the light it gave off was the same shade as the walls, only far more brilliant. It seemed to be some kind of energy conduit, and ran off into the far distance, visible in the darkness for miles. The cord passed into the fortress through a large gate in the back. As Kelsier crept closer, he found that little lines of energy were running across the stone of the wall. They branched smaller and smaller, like a glowing web of veins. The fortress was tall, imposing, like a keep, but without the ornamentation. It didn't have a separate fortification around it, but its walls were steep and sheer. Guards moved atop the roof, and as one passed, Kelsier pushed himself down into the ground. He was able to sink into it completely, becoming nearly invisible, though that required grabbing hold of the ground and pulling himself downward until only the top of his head was visible. The guards didn't notice him. He climbed back out of the ground and inched up to the base of the fortress wall. He pressed his hand against the glowing stone and was given the impression of a rocky wall far from here, in another place. An unfamiliar land with striking green plants. He gasped, pulling his hand away. These weren't stones, but the spirits of stones, like his spirit of a fire. They had been brought here and constructed into a building. Suddenly, he didn't feel quite so clever at having found himself a staff and a sack. He touched the stone again, looking at that green landscape. That was what Mare had talked about. A land with an open blue sky. Another planet, he decided. One that didn't suffer our fate. For the moment, he ignored the image of that place, pushing his fingers through the spirit of the stone. Strangely, the stone resisted. Kelsier gritted his teeth and pushed harder. He managed to get his fingers to sink in about 2 inches, but couldn't make them go any farther. It's that light, he thought. It pushed back on him. Looks a little like the light of souls. Well, he couldn't slip through the wall. What now? He retreated into the shadows to consider. Should he try to sneak in one of the gates? He rounded the building, contemplating this for a short time before suddenly feeling foolish. He hurried forward to the wall again and pressed his hand against the stones, sinking his fingers in a few inches. Then he reached up and did the same with the other hand. Then he proceeded to scale the wall. Though he missed steel pushing, this method proved quite effective. He could grip the wall basically anywhere he wanted, and his form didn't have much weight. Climbing was easy, as long as he maintained his concentration. Those images of a land with green plants were very distracting. Not a speck of ash in sight. A piece of him had always considered Mare's flower a fanciful story, and while the place looked strange, it also attracted him with its alien beauty. There was something about it that was incredibly inviting. Unfortunately, the wall kept trying to spit his fingers back out, and maintaining his grip took a great deal of attention. He continued moving. He could revel in that luxurious scene of green grass and pleasant hills another time. One of the upper levels had a window big enough to get through, which was good. The guards on the keep's top would have been difficult to dodge. Kelsier slipped in the window, entering a long stone corridor lit by the spiderwebs of power coursing across the walls, floor, and ceiling. The energy must keep the stones from evaporating, Kelsier thought. All the souls he'd brought with him had begun to deteriorate, but these stones were solid and unbroken. Those tiny lines of power were somehow sustaining the spirits of the stone, and perhaps as a side effect, keeping people like Kelsier from passing through the walls. He crept down the corridor. He wasn't sure what he was searching for, but he wouldn't have learned anything more by sitting outside and waiting. The power coursing through this place kept giving him visions of another world, and, he realized with discomfort, the energy seemed to be permeating him, mixing with his soul's own energy, which had already been touched by the power at the well. In a few brief moments, he had started to think that place with the green plants looked normal. He heard voices echoing in the hallway, speaking a strange language with a nasal tone. Prepared for this, Kelsier scrambled out a window and clung there, just outside. A pair of guards hurried through the hallway beside him, and after they passed, he peeked in to see that they were wearing long, white-blue tabards, pikes at their shoulders. They had fair skin and looked like they could have been from one of the dominances, except for their strange language. They spoke energetically, and as the words washed across him, Kelsier thought, he thought he could make some of it out. Yes, they speak the language of open fields, of green plants, of where these stones come from, and the source of this power.
He's pretty sure he saw something, sir, one guard was saying.
The words struck Kelsier strangely. On one hand, he felt they should be indecipherable. On the other hand, he instantly knew what they meant.
How would a Threnodite have made it all the way here? The other guard snapped. It defies reason, I tell you.
They passed through the doors at the other end of the hall. Kelsier climbed back into the corridor, curious. Had a guard seen him outside then? This didn't seem like a general alarm, so if he had been spotted, the glimpse had been brief. He debated fleeing, but decided to follow the guards instead. Though most new thieves tried to avoid guards during an infiltration, Kelsier's experience showed that you generally wanted to tail them, for they'd always stick close to the things that were most important. He wasn't certain if they could harm him in any way, though he figured it would be best not to find out. So he stayed a good distance back from the guards. After curving through a few stone corridors, they reached a door and went in. Kelsier crept up, cracked it, and was rewarded by the sight of a larger chamber where a small group of guards was setting up a strange device. A large yellow gemstone, the size of Kelsier's fist, shone in the center, glowing even more brightly than the walls. That gem was surrounded by a lattice of golden metal holding it in place. All told, it was the size of a desk clock. Kelsier leaned forward, hidden just outside the door. That gemstone, that had to be worth a fortune. A different door into the room, one opposite him, slammed open, causing several guards to jump, then salute. The creature that entered seemed, well, mostly human. Wizened, dried up, the woman had puckered lips, a